It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. After a Purdue University and Wabash College football game with a 44-0 score in 1891, a sports writer for the Daily Argus wrote in a headline, "Wabash snowed completely under by the burly Boilermakers from Purdue." By the next football season, the name had stuck. Ever since, Purdue's teams have been known as the Boilermakers, and the school's mascot is now the Boilermaker Special, a vehicle outfitted to look like the 19th century steam engines that Boilermakers built throughout the country. We'll hear music about trains and learn some little-known facts and myths about Purdue on today's What's New. In a moment, we'll speak with David Hovde from the Purdue Archives about Boilermakers. But first, let's hear the Purdue All-American Band with Jay Gephardt in "Hail Purdue," written by Edward Watawa on What's New. Edward Watawa's "Hail Purdue" with the Purdue All-American Band and director Jay Gephardt. Find out more about What's New at WBAA.org, including our playlists and podcasts. That's WBAA.org. David Hovde is a research and instruction librarian in the Virginia Kelly Carnes Archives and Special Collections Research Center. I asked David about some of the things that make Purdue unique.
Purdue does definitely have a rich history. It had the first university airport. People like President Eliot and David Ross were very instrumental in getting that here. The radio station is obviously another, and how it came about, and the first rocketry program, and very early on in aeronautics, all sorts of different things. The archives has a goodly amount of that material for people to come and look at. Like I say, Purdue has a very, very rich history. There are gaps because some departments didn't save their records. They threw them out, and that's just a natural for an organization like this. But we're busy both collecting materials and recovering the lost history of various parts of the history of this organization. We have here at Purdue the bulk of the Amelia Earhart papers. They are entirely available online. Some of it is available on campus, online on campus, and then more of it is available off campus. But photographs, letters, maps, her pilot's license, just a whole variety of different things are available to look at. And that is the way that you can access them, because they're an incredibly fragile collection. And we pretty much prefer that you look at it online because it's entirely available.
You can see more and hear more online at the archives and on our website, WBAA.org. Let's hear a work inspired by a locomotive, Ader Villa-Lobos's The Little Train of the Bazillion Countrymen. The Cincinnati Symphony is led by Jesus Lopez Cobos on What's New. The Little Train of the Bazillion Countrymen by Ader Villa-Lobos. We heard Jesus Lopez Cobos and the Cincinnati Symphony on What's New. Find out more at WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. We're exploring music inspired by trains, something associated with Purdue University. I had to ask about the early broadcasts from Purdue of the radio station and how it came about. Here's David Hovde.
One of the things that, Purdue as a land-grant college did during wartime was to bring in not only the military science students, but bring in units from outside for training. They certainly did that in World War II. And in World War I, one of the programs that was instituted here was a radio telegraphy and what they call radio telephony program, teaching Army personnel how to use that kind of electronic equipment. They were promised radios and for broadcasting and receiving and so on like that. Apparently, what they got were manuals on how to build them. And so two professors and a group of students created these machines. And when they were finished, the first thing they did was they took the broadcasting part of it out to the Stewart Field, which was the football field next to the current armory. One of the professors spent the afternoon singing KKK Katie, which was a World War I ditty. One of the professors spent the afternoon singing KKK Katie, which was a World War I ditty, basically all afternoon, with no clue whatsoever if anybody actually received the broadcast, but that's considered to be the first broadcast, radio broadcast from Purdue University.
Look at the fair one.
Some doll.
Who is she?
Why, that's Jimmy's bride.
Jimmy, come on over.
I can't. It's against the rules and regulations.
I'll write it to her.
There'll be sound and taps before he can tell it.
You better come over here, Katie.
All right, I will.
Say, wouldn't Jimmy make a fine officer? I'd bet it took him a long time to propose.
He didn't propose.
Who did?
Why, Katie did.
Oh, Jimmy. Oh, say, can't you get a pass for tonight?
Don't know. I'll try.
Company, attention. Forward, guide right. Forward.
Katie, beautiful Katie. You're the only girl that I adore. When the moon shines over the cow shed, I'll be waiting at the kitchen door.
K-K-K-Katie, a song that was part of the very first transmission from Purdue, according to David Hovde from the Archives and Special Collections Research Center. Let's hear some dances. Gallops here, inspired by trains. It's the Locomotive Gallop by Philip Farbach, and Joseph Gungel's Steam Train Gallop on What's New. Joseph Gungel's Steam Train Gallop, and we began with the Locomotive Gallop by Philip Farbach on What's New. We're featuring music inspired by trains on this Boilermaker Classics show, and we'll continue with Aaron Copland's John Henry. Copland wrote, "Knowing my audience was to be a young one, and that young people like their music exciting and not too long, I kept John Henry down to less than 4 minutes and called it a descriptive fantasy. The music is meant to simulate the sounds of a train and John Henry's hammer." Here's Yuri Starek and the Southwest German Radio Symphony on What's New. John Henry by American composer Aaron Copland on What's New. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. MGV is a work from 1993 by English composer Michael Nyman. It was commissioned by the Festival de Lille for the inauguration of the TGV, France's inner-city high-speed rail service, North European Paris Lille line. Michael Nyman leads the Michael Nyman Band on What's New. Michael Nyman's MGV with a composer leading the Michael Nyman Band on What's New. Find out more at WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. We'll turn to the great Leonard Bernstein for our next train music, this time from New York City. From Bernstein's On the Town, here's Subway Ride and the Imaginary Coney Island. Yuri Starek and the Southwest German Radio Symphony played Subway Ride and The Imaginary Coney Island from Leonard Bernstein's On the Town. There's more about what's new at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. We're enjoying music inspired by trains, and we're saluting Purdue University, the Boilermakers. Here's the Purdue fanfare on What's New. Jay Gephardt leads the Purdue University All-American Band. The opening track of The Heartbeat by the Purdue University All-American Band. Jay Gephardt directed the Purdue Fanfare by Matt Conaway on What's New. I spoke with David Hovde, a research and instruction librarian in the Virginia Kelly Carnes Archives and Special Collections Research Center at Purdue University. I asked him about what sort of myths he hears about Boilermakers and Purdue.
The stories about the influence John Purdue had on the university I hear every day. And I'm constantly questioned about them. For example, John Purdue, you know, was dug up by students from another campus, and he's no longer buried there. You know, it's in a very public place, you know, and that never happened. There's no evidence anywhere that ever happened. He's buried, you know, in that vicinity of where the fountain is. His burial was very quick. About the only thing they did, as I recall, was to have a local dentist for, I think the fee was $25, to create a death mask of John Purdue before he was buried. And we have that in the archives. It's a very interesting artifact that a lot of students like to see. The other is things such as, you know, that Purdue in his will, that's usually how it starts. John Purdue in his will said X. The biggest problem there is Purdue didn't have a will. He died intestate, so which means he did not have a will. And it took some time for his estate to be settled. So one of them is, you know, that all buildings have to be red brick. The problem there, of course, is that a number of buildings, smaller buildings, but of the major buildings in the what is now the center of campus around University Hall, there was a building called the Military Hall and Gymnasium that was board and batten. And it was a significant building in its day. It was the armory. It was the gymnasium. Until University Hall was built a few years later, it served as the auditorium. The first graduating class of Purdue University, which was composed of one person, one student, John Bradford Harper, graduated in that building in John Purdue's presence. So right off the top, that is a myth, and there's no basis in fact. A lot of these myths, you can trace their development in like the student handbooks, which we have starting in the 1890s. And they get a little more interesting as time goes on. And again, very few of them have any factual basis.
David Hovde from the Archives and Special Collections Research Center talking about Purdue myths. It's a fact that Jennifer Higdon wrote her logo for the Ravinia Festival. The Chicago Sun-Times wrote, evoking both a hurtling locomotive and crazy momentum, Loco was full of vivid detail. Let's hear Miguel Harth Bedoya and the Fort Worth Symphony in Loco by Jennifer Higdon on What's New. Jennifer Higdon's Loco, written in 2004. We heard the Fort Worth Symphony and Miguel Harth Bedoya on What's New. There's more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. Librarian and researcher David Hovde discusses some of the lesser-known facts about Purdue.
A lot of people think that, for example, that the large amount of international students that we have on campus is something new. Purdue started recruiting students from like China and the Philippines very early on. The first Chinese student came here in, I believe it was 1906. We had a very active Chinese student association going well back into the 1920s. As a matter of fact, Purdue produced promotional materials in Chinese. We have a fairly good record of some of the earliest international students that came here. I think the first one was from Spain, excluding Canada, of course. We had a Chinese student, not too long ago come to the archives looking for information about his grandfather who had come here as a student. You know, those early students, we do have, at least to a degree, we know when they went back to China, what they did and who they worked for. And of course, that pretty much all stopped around World War II. The information just was not accessible.
Is there an international student or a Chinese student that sort of stands out?
Well, the one that I think attracts the most attention is Deng Xiaozhen. He received his PhD in 1950. He went on to, when he returned to China, he was instrumental in the development of the first Chinese nuclear weapon. He's quite revered in China, and when students come to the archives or visiting scholars and they hear that we have his dissertation, they want to see it and they want to take photographs of it to bring back to their families. So it's a very much a treasured artifact for that part of our community.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that just, you know, like every other day someone calls and says, oh, hey, do we have this? Or someone stops by and say, I really am interested in this about Purdue. Is there anything else that we've missed that you would like to highlight?
I think that one of the parts of our collection that is growing, that a lot of students are fascinated with, and that is the engineers and the astronauts and the early faculty here at Purdue, you know, were involved in the space program. One of my colleagues there in the archives by the name of Tracy Grimm, it's her responsibility to develop this collection and make it available to students primarily and other researchers. You know, with the support of Neil Armstrong to give us his personal papers, and Eugene Cernan, and a number of other astronauts, again, and engineers. It is a collection that is becoming very well known. The thing I always stress to the classes that come to the archives is that we look upon the students as our primary user group. And we encourage them to come and use the material. When they are able to look at one of Neil Armstrong's student papers that he wrote while here at Purdue, some of the, particularly the engineering students, says, you know, I can do this too, you know. And occasionally I've had a few students that have been moved to tears by the material that they're holding in their hands. One I didn't know at the beginning, but one of the items that I was showing these students had been created by her grandfather when he was a student here, and she just, you know, had nothing of his, and now in her hand was an engineering project that he had built. They're absolutely fascinated by some of these incredibly famous, important people, that here's this paper that he wrote, or here's this object that Amelia Earhart took with her on a flight. They were here. They were part of this institution just like they are. It's interesting to see their faces sometimes when they realize what they're using and what they're having in their hand, you know, like an item that's actually been in space or on the moon, you know, and it's a great deal of fun to watch their reactions.
Here's some fun with classical music and trains, The Railway Fugue by Hilding Rosenberg from his Journey to America on What's New. A selection from Hilding Rosenberg's Journey to America. We heard The Railway Fugue with the Southwest German Radio Symphony and Yuri Starek on What's New. I'm your host, John Clare. Find out more at WBAA.org. Different Trains is a piece for string quartet and tape written by Steve Reich in 1988. It's in three movements: America before the war, Europe during the war, and after the war. The Kronos Quartet are featured on What's New. During World War II, Steve Reich made train journeys between New York and Los Angeles to visit his parents, who had separated. Years later, he pondered the fact that, as a Jew, had he been in Europe instead of the United States at that time, he might have been traveling in Holocaust trains. We heard the Kronos Quartet play Different Trains by Steve Reich on What's New. There's more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. We'll end with a work by a French train enthusiast and composer. Pacific 231 is an orchestra piece by Arthur Honegger. Written in 1923, Honegger said, "I've always loved locomotives passionately. For me, they're living creatures, and I love them as others love women or horses." Here's Marius Janssens leading the Oslo Philharmonic on What's New. Arthur Honegger's Pacific 231, a class of steam locomotive on What's New. Learn more at WBAA.org. What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yon and Kevin Howard, the content director and executive producer is Greg Estraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.